This episode is brought to you by livingrelief.com, a Wolfpack-owned business that is your source for Delta 8, CBD, THCV, gummies, tinctures, chocolates, all North Carolina-based quality products that can help with sleep, anxiety, pain, and countless other medical benefits. Highly recommend checking these guys out. Their stuff is really good. And if you use code REDWHITE20, you get 20% off your first order. That's REDWHITE20. LivingRelief.com. Living, RELEAF.com. Thanks for listening. I was raised by the wolves. I was raised by the wolves. 8 to the 4. All right, folks, we are back with another edition of the Red and White Podcast. I'm your host, Evan, here with my man, Justin Strong, from the Starkville State of Mind Podcast. Justin, how are you doing? It's been a long time. We last spoke 2015 when Dak Prescott was running all over us. Dak Prescott is not in Starkville anymore, is he?
Okay, he's not. Thank God.
That was brutal. That was the last time you and I spoke. It was a while ago. And thinking back on it now, this is just a random thought I had the other day. I don't know why State thought our state, North Carolina State, thought they had any chance having playing against the greatest quarterback in Mississippi State history, arguably.
Right.
Probably not arguably. I'm not sure.
Oh, yeah, he is. Yeah, there's no doubt about that.
I equate it to when State played Kansas in the bowl game, Phillip Rivers' senior year, and it's like Kansas had no chance. Like, he was not losing that game. It's the same thing. Like, we didn't put that together. But Dak Prescott is no longer there, and I'll jump right into it. How did you feel year two of Mike Leach with that first game? That was a roller coaster.
It was. Obviously, there were times that when it first started, it looked like they were answering a lot of questions that people had about Mississippi State going into the season. It looked like, it was hard to take too much away from a really good performance to start off the game because it was still Louisiana Tech, but they were doing what you expected. The offense was rolling pretty good. Defense was playing completely lights out. And then NC State hits them with a big play to close out the first quarter, and it was like the team was shell-shocked. They just couldn't seem to rebound. They couldn't seem to recover. And it took them two whole quarters, and basically if Tulu Griffin doesn't get just an incredible kick return to start the fourth quarter for the Bulldogs, I don't know that they'd pull that comeback off. It was a roller coaster. There's a lot I didn't like. There were some things I liked, but there's a lot of things I didn't like. And I was thinking about this the other day when I was on your show 6 years ago with the Belk Bowl. I felt like I really understood what Mississippi State was, who they were. We were in year seven of the Dan Mullen era, and I could give you a really good idea of what would happen. And I think it played out pretty well how I thought it was going to play out. But with this being the second year of Mike Leach making the transition, third head coach in 4 years, it's hard to tell what this team is right now.
Yeah, I had a feeling. I was watching that game, and the what I took away from this from our point of view was that Mississippi State still won, having not played very well in the first half, right? In the first three quarters, essentially.
Right.
They were – I feel like they were trying to hold some things back from not putting stuff on tape, so to speak. But also,
right,
they made some mistakes, had some turnovers. But in the fourth quarter, when it mattered, they said, all right, we have got to score. And they scored. And they scored pretty easily when they wanted to. Will Rogers looked like a completely different quarterback from, the first three quarters to the last one, right?
Right.
I mean, that's got to be more of what you're expecting from a Mike Leach team, right?
Yeah, that's exactly what we were expecting. When that fourth quarter was, it showed what the offense can do. I mean, there's a person who writes for Cowboy Corner. She used to cover LSU, but she's now running Cowboy Corner. Her name's Chrissy Freud. She's done a lot of work with quarterbacks and with the air raid system. I interviewed her back in the summer, I was just doing some off season content, and I was asking her thoughts. When this is when she I was still thinking she was covering LSU. You know, what can we expect from this offense? Because the offense struggled in 2020 big time. I mean, it finally kind of found its way towards the end of the season, but for the most part, it struggled mightily throughout the course of the season. And I asked her, I was like, how can we truly expect a jump? And she said, yes, because she said, when the air raid is working the way it's supposed to, it's a really hard offense to stop. And you kind of got a glimpse of that in that fourth quarter. And you got a little bit of a glimpse of it in the first quarter as well. It's just, it's a difficult offense to prepare for, but Mississippi State's problem, and it showed up again in the second and third quarter. The problem they had last year were two things. And it was the two things that were the biggest issues on Saturday: the offensive line and turnovers. The offensive line, it's not that they're not talented, because like when I talked to you back in 2015, there was an offensive line problem as well back then, but it was a talent issue. They had a senior tight end that they had to convert to left tackle. This isn't a talent issue. Charles Cross is supposed to be a first-round pick in the NFL draft coming up, and he's just completely confused out there at times. Same thing for like their second-best lineman, Dollar Bill. His last name's Johnson. I can't pronounce his first name. But he looks lost out there. It's they don't seem to understand their blocking right. schemes, and they're paying a price for it. But the other issue is the turnovers. They had six turnovers on Saturday. That's just never going to win. Now, the one good thing about it, they went from throwing interceptions all the time last year to fumbles. So I don't know if that's any better, but at least when you're throwing the ball 50 times a game, you don't want to be right. throwing picks.
That's funny you mentioned that about the offensive line. One of the notes I was putting in our chat as most of our guys were watching that game is I thought that offensive line, they had the size, but they looked slow. And so, and that might be part of what you're saying, is that if they don't know their assignments, they're probably slow to react, right? And then maybe that's one and the same thing there. And I thought that's how Louisiana.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a lot of what it is. It's not that they're slow. It's just they seem to like – it's like – they just don't know where to go. And the problem is most of the time they're only facing a three-man right. rush. And so that's just what's so confounding and so hard to figure out with this team, is they should be able to block three guys and they can't seem to always do it.
Yeah. State's going to bring a three-man front, and I'm curious how we engage with that. I think we are probably tend to be more power as opposed to speed, and I wonder if the smaller Louisiana Tech guys were giving them trouble in that in those blocking schemes. I'm not sure.
One of the things I did notice, and this kind of goes back to the confusion, when it was just the three guys, they typically did okay. It was when they brought stunts and those late blitzes. It's like they didn't know when to shed the guy that they were blocking to pick up the guy who was right. coming in. That seemed to really disrupt the offensive line on Saturday. I don't know. Like I said, I don't know how NC State, if they're going to try to mimic that, I would think that they would. But because that's basically what happened last year. First game of the year last year, LSU, KJ Costello puts up 623 passing yards, sets an SEC record. And then the very next game, Arkansas basically institutes a zone, three-man front, drop eight. And they couldn't figure it out. And that's what every team did basically all the way up until the Georgia right. game.
How have they adjusted to that? Do you not know that?
They didn't adjust well. KJ Costello, he could not read his own. He could not read his own. I don't know what it was. But you put him in you put his own defense in front of him, and he couldn't figure it out. And the other issue, once again, you have to – if they're going to drop eight – you need your quarterback to be able to just sit there and have time to find the hole, because the hole will eventually get there. But the offensive line last year was not giving him time, despite the fact they were only bringing three. And that was such a huge issue for both KJ Costello and eventually Will Rogers when they switched over to him. Now, they started to figure it out the last four games of the year. I mean, they beat Vanderbilt in game five last year. But it looked really, really bad. I mean, they only won by like a touchdown. And so the next game, when they took on Georgia, everybody assumed it was going to be just an absolute beatdown. But they kind of found their way a little bit, and actually had the ball on the last drive of the game with a chance to tie. And they just couldn't pull it off. And like I said, then they started kind of finding their way, played better against Ole Miss, ended up losing because of a turnover, basically. Played a little better against Auburn, then just had a coming out party against Missouri. So we had hope going into this year. And like I said, there were times when it looked good on Saturday, but there were times when you saw just the same old issue still.
How, and maybe I'm getting ahead of myself, but bring what you just said back into context. How do you guys feel about Mike Leach so far? Like, what is the general consensus?
People aren't patient. Unfortunately, in today's day and age, people just aren't patient. They don't want to wait. And people tend to forget that Mississippi State is a tough job to win at. I tweeted this out yesterday when the state was down 20. There's only a handful of guys who have – only a handful of coaches that have had any real success at Mississippi State. So it's tough to do. And now Mike Leach has a track record of winning at places that are similar to Mississippi State. He won at Texas Tech, which is very similar to Mississippi State in the Big 12. Same thing in Washington State. So if there's a guy I think who can do it, I think he can. But people kind of forgot over the 9 years that Dan Mullen was there that it's not an easy thing to do to win at Mississippi State. A lot of people are impatient. And we're in a third coach in 4 years. I mean, Austin Williams, who had like five or six catches on Saturday, he was on Dan Mullen's team. I mean, that's just how mixed up this roster is. It's not a good roster for the air raid. It's better than it was last year, but it's still a bit of a struggle for this team because it's just not built for this type of an offense.
How this is not related to this game at all, but it's just something curious. How do people view – how do Mississippi State fans feel about Leach in the context with Lane Kiffin on the other side of the state getting all this attention and, you know, he's very flashy and whatever, you know. How does that contrast? Does that fit your fan base? Is that like – how's that going on down there?
Here's the thing I've said, and most people will tell you, both Mississippi State and Ole Miss people – both State and Ole Miss got perfect fits for their schools. Ole Miss is all about flash. They're all about, you know, look at us. We want the attention. We want the spotlight. And State's much more blue collar. They prefer a much more just blue collar attitude. And that's much more what Mike Leach actually is. I mean, they have absolutely perfect personalities for the jobs that they're at.
That's interesting. That's kind of what I see that, and I see just how they interact. How do – bring us back to NC State. How do Mississippi State fans view, let's say, our program just in general? Like when you look at the schedule, NC State's coming to town, what does that do for y'all?
Well, I think most Mississippi State fans kind of feel that Mississippi State and NC State are similar programs. They're not power schools. They're not the best schools in the conference. But when things are right, they can compete with the rest of the conference just as well as anybody. It's just you have to have certain things line up. You have to have the right roster in place. You have to have the right coach in place. And when those things happen, then you can compete. I think most State fans kind of feel that's NC State and Mississippi State are very, very similar programs.
I think so, too. And it's funny how many times – two random programs from different conferences, just nowhere near each other, have crossed paths. So, like 2015 Belk Bowl, this what should have been in the College World Series, right? And then, now we're playing again. Right? That's more times than we've played Duke in the last I don't know how many years in football, which is crazy, right?
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, State's only played Missouri twice in the 9-10 years that Missouri's been in the SEC.
Oh, wow. That's wild. Yeah, it's – I don't know. I don't know how you guys feel, but I know most of us are not a fan of divisions in the conference, and this is getting way off tank, way off topic. But having straight up, you know, one division, you know, rotating more regularly, like it's crazy that Duke's 15 minutes down the road and we haven't played them, you know, and since last year – was like 9 years before that or something like that. It's insane.
Yeah, well, I'm interested to see how they do it once Oklahoma and Texas join the SEC because there's 16 teams there. So I'm not sure how that's going to work, but I'm sure they'll figure it out.
Who is somebody on Mississippi State's roster that State fans should be aware of? Our State.
my understanding is North Carolina State, they like to run the ball more than the pass. Is that, am I correct?
Yeah, Dave Doran definitely wants to run the ball. Yeah.
Then I would definitely want to pay attention to Jaden Cromedy. He is probably State's best defensive lineman. He's the guy who kind of makes everything else work for them. Also, probably in that same regard, Aaron Brule, linebacker for the Bulldogs. He's kind of taking. He's got big shoes to fill. Errol Thompson was a fifth-year senior last year. He was an undrafted free agent. He signed with the Falcons, but they did cut him. I don't know if he's been picked up anywhere else. But he was just the leader of that defense, and Aaron Brule's trying to pick up that role and fill in where he left off. The defense is should be really good. The Mississippi State had two huge breakdowns on Saturday, and that's kind of what allowed Louisiana Tech to get back into the game and kind of take control of it. The defense, most people don't understand just what Zach Arnett, the defensive coordinator for Mississippi State, did last year. Last year, going into the year, everybody was talking about, you know, can Mississippi State be like 10th or 11th in the SEC in total defense? That's how bad they were supposed to be, because they 2018 they were the best defense in the country. 2019 they took a step back, but they were still pretty good. But almost all the key pieces were gone in 2020. And Zach Arnett, I mean, he had a mess of he inherited a mess, and he turned it into the fourth best defense in the SEC last year. And like I said, he didn't get a lot of credit for it because State wasn't good last year. But the only thing that was keeping them in those games was the defense. And so it's kind of surprising to see Louisiana Tech have some of the success they had on Saturday. But they did really well against the run. I think Louisiana Tech, if I remember correctly, only had like 102 yards rushing, and most of that came on one play. So I'll be interested to see how NC State handles that and how Mississippi State responds to it as well.
Yeah, they're Mississippi State, that's one thing I remember about their team last year. That defense was legit. You know, they obviously beat LSU and then struggled everywhere else, but the defense kept them in a lot of games. And
I mean, if you look at the Kentucky game, they lost 28-2, but I think Kentucky had like 150 yards because Mississippi State kept turning the football over inside like their own 30. That was the issue for them.
Yeah, I think that's going to be interesting. I was curious. I know that wasn't their best defensive effort against Louisiana Tech. How many of those guys, how many in the team returned from last year, right? Everybody talks about returning talent. Everybody's got a bunch.
How many
you guys got back?
There's a good many of them. I can't tell you exactly how many off the top of my head, but they were one of the youngest teams. Once they got to the point where they were basically playing with the guys that they were going to play with, they were a very young team last year. I think I saw a stat that said they were like the 120th in terms of game experience in the entire FBS last year, and they're basically right there again this year. They've got a lot of young people, and I think that's one of the reasons why they struggled so much on Saturday once Louisiana Tech hit that big play to close out the first quarter. I was listening to a friend of mine's podcast. He and another guy do it. It's called Thunder and Lightning, and they were talking about this, that Mississippi State's just immature. They once they got kind of punched in the mouth there, they wilted, and they just kind of fell apart. And Mike Leach talked about this in the post game press conference. They had guys quit. And that was an issue that goes back to Joe Moorhead. That was one of the problems that they had that's one of the reasons he's not the coach anymore, is because the team, whenever things got tough, they just gave up. Now it's a credit to Mike Leach and his staff, and really also to Will Rogers, for finding something to get them going and eventually pull off that comeback that they did. But this team, they still have that part of them that just says, you know what, things are tough, I don't want to try anymore.
That's interesting. I'm curious how.
And if you know Mike Leach, he doesn't abide by that.
Right.
He does not take that at all.
Yeah. Typically when you see Leach early on in these programs, Texas Tech, I remember, and Washington State was the same way. He had a lot of roster turnover in his first, two or three years. Mm-hmm. Have y'all experienced some of that?
Oh, yeah. I don't remember what the exact quote was last year, but it raised a lot of eyebrows because he said something along the lines of, like, getting rid of the cancers or something. I don't remember exactly what the line was, but he was basically saying, we got guys that we got to get out of the program. and he was doing that. I mean, there was like 15 transfers in the season last year, and it made a lot of headlines because it was in the middle of the year, but a lot of those transfers probably would have taken place in the off season had there been a spring. And there was no spring, so all this stuff was happening in the middle of the season. And he goes, he said, you know, he wasn't worried about it because he just kind of expects it. And I expect there'll probably be some more turnover until he gets this roster to the point where he wants it.
So same question offensively. Who's the guy that State needs to know about? State fans need to know about.
Well, obviously, you want to start with the quarterback, yeah. Will Rogers. But besides him, I would say Jaden Wally. It was interesting. He was State's best receiver, like, far and away last year. He was a freshman, All-American. And for some reason, they had him starting second string for this game. And it was very easy to figure out after about the second or third series that he shouldn't be second string. He lost that job to Austin Williams. And Austin Williams is a good player. He's a captain. I think that's probably one of the reasons why they wanted him on the first string. But Jaden Wally's just so much better. He needs to be on the field a lot more than he was. Like I said, I don't know if they were trying to send some kind of a message or whatever, but he's a guy that you want to watch. Another guy that you'll want to pay attention to, and the reason why Mississippi State got into it back into the game, was Tulu Griffin. At number five, he's a kick returner. If you got a kicker that can kick you out of the back of the end zone, their coach needs to make sure he does that. If they start trying to get cute and start trying to, like, do, you know, the big pop-ups to pin them deep, Tulu Griffin has been burning people. He was injured a lot last year, didn't really get a chance to play until the 10th game of the year in the bowl game. But once they started kicking to him in the kicking game, he was making people pay big time. And like I said, it was his return at the start of the fourth quarter that kind of sparked the comeback.
They had a lot of – during that Louisiana Tech game, the first – I don't know. I felt like the first eight of the first 15 plays were swing passes to the running back. Who's the running back talent on Mississippi State?
They've got two. They're both COVID freshmen. Jaquavius Marks, he is the guy that has made the biggest improvement. And Dylan Johnson. Dylan Johnson had a rough game. He fumbled at least once. The issue that they've got to figure out, and this they struggled with last year, is they've got to get the ball to those guys when they're doing the swing passes while they're moving. What ends up happening is, and this is where Will Rogers has to improve, he's got to make his reads quicker. Because so often by the time he gets down to that check down for those two guys, they're just standing there. They got somebody on them, so he only ends up going for like 2 or 3 yards. If you look at their yards per reception, I think they both average right around 3 yards per catch. So they've got to get better about catching the ball while they're on the move. And like I said, Will Rogers has to make the progressions a lot quicker if they're going to do that, because he's just not doing it right now. And that's probably his area where he has to get better as well. He just has to go through those reads faster. But Marks has improved a lot. He actually averaged about 6 yards a carry yesterday. They don't run the ball much, but when they do, that's what they need. They need a guy who can get up 6 to 7 yards per carry and just kind of keep that in the back of the defense's mind. And if he can do that, then State's offense will have a dimension that it desperately needs just to keep your defense honest. If you're only going to rush 3 and drop 8, just know that they can. If you're going to give them the running backs those 6-7 yards that Mike Leach will occasionally take.
Yeah, I noticed that too. Louisiana Tech started dropping back early in that game, and I was telling the guys, this is where right when Leach likes to run draw, right? A delayed draw, and that's exactly what he did, and then Louisiana Tech came back up, and then they started throwing it again. I mean, it was like almost rhythmic. You could see that how that offense was working like that. I mean, they were just pulling them in, throwing them back, you know, pushing them back. It was interesting to watch. Will Rogers, to me, looked like a completely different quarterback late in that game. Like, early on, it looked like you said, he wasn't making quick decisions, but also looked like he wasn't, like, throwing the ball. He was kind of just lobbing it in a lot of places. In the end of the game, he really looked like he put some zip on the ball. Which Will Rogers are we expecting?
Well, that's one of the problems that Will Rogers has. He doesn't have a strong arm. It's going to be the one thing that holds him back. It's going to be the one thing that is going to make it difficult for him to have a ton of success, is because of the fact that he doesn't have the strongest arm. He has to be, to make up for it, he has to be decisive and he's got to be accurate. He was accurate on Saturday. That part was not the problem. The problem was that he wasn't as decisive as he needed to be. And I think a lot of that just works his offensive line issues. I think that works all together because he wasn't sure if he was going to get the protection he was supposed to have, and that made him a little bit hesitant. When he's decisive, he can run the offense really well. Like it's like you said, I mean, that last quarter, he looked like a completely different quarterback because he was making his decisions quick, and he was actually getting some protection from the offensive line for the first time all game. Right. So, like I said, it is a problem that he has. He doesn't have a very strong arm. He's not going to hit 50, 60, 70-yard bombs down the field. But where he thrives and what he does well is if he makes those quick reads, he just thrives in like the 8 to 15-yard mm-hmm. passing plays. And that's when he's at his best, he's hitting those constantly. And his receivers are getting 6 to 7 yards after the yards after the catch. That's when he's at his best. If he can make those decisions quickly and find his receivers in the holes in the zone quickly, that's what he does. I'll be interested to see if he holds on to his job next year because he's got a stud of a recruit behind him, Sawyer Robertson. A lot of people thought that if Sawyer Robertson hadn't decided to play baseball for his high school team his senior year and he'd come to state during the spring, that he might be the starter this year. But he decided to go ahead. He wanted to play baseball, and he did, and he didn't get the spring, and he didn't really get a chance to compete for the starting job this year. But a lot of people thought that he might could have taken it from him.
Yeah, that was going to be my next question. What's the quarterback situation here? Last year, it felt like you guys rotated a lot trying to find the guy, right? Is Rodgers going to stick?
I think Rodgers is going to stick for this year. Like I said, I don't know once Sawyer Robertson gets into this if he's going to stay. A lot of people thought that Jack Abraham, the Southern Miss transfer, had a real chance to upend Rodgers as well. People thought, you know, it was going to be another Gardner Minshew type of situation, a transfer quarterback who comes in from a really small school that a lot of people don't really know about. But he ended up getting hurt, and he didn't get a chance to really compete for it as well. Chance Lovertich is, I think, a South Alabama transfer. I think that's where he came from. It's kind of the same deal, but he just didn't have what it took to really put a lot of pressure on Will Rogers. But I really think Will Rogers will stick this year. Like I said, I'm really interested to see what happens next year, though, when with Sawyer Robertson having a year in the system and having the big arm, having a ton of talent, and playing in a system that's very similar to what Mike Leach uses in high school. Like I said, I'll be interested to see how that plays out next year.
Yeah. Interesting. If you could take, and I'm not sure how much you know about NC State or how much you guys have looked into it already this week, if you could take one guy from NC State's roster and put him on Mississippi State, who would it be? And another way to answer this, what's the biggest?
Well, I haven't had a chance to look at a ton of their roster yet. The main thing I would probably want, I actually like the receivers that State has. What they really need more than anything is a defensive back. I've heard that they have a pretty good secondary. I don't know if that's true or not. Jalen Green is who's a transfer from Texas. He was a former four-star. Everything we had heard from the people covering the team in practice, they said he's doing a great job. He looks really good. He didn't look good on Saturday. So I don't know if you got a safety back there that we could use, but that would probably be where I would go.
Yeah, our secondary has been historically our question mark. I think it's been the area that let us down. I think this year we feel pretty good that we're a little bit deeper. We brought in Cyrus Fagan from FSU, already showed an impact early on. Had an interception in the South Florida game. Derek Pitts, a guy who's played a lot of football from Marshall, West Virginia. You know, so we've got some guys that we recruited that, you know, four-star corners who've now getting into their sophomore, junior years that we feel pretty good about. They haven't been tested. We don't play many air raid teams, you know, so it's going to be something new to them. What my concern is that Tony Gibson, our defensive coordinator, likes to play aggressive. So we play a lot of man, we blitz a lot. It's a bad something that's a bad combination for an air raid team, right? You need to sit back and kind of control it, make them have long sustained drives. But that's just not something that we have done in the past. So I'm curious how we're going to approach that. But the skill in our secondary is pretty good.
Right. That's the one thing I always want to know, that, and I'm glad you actually brought that up, because what is the defensive coordinator like? Is he one of the – is he, because almost every defensive coordinator out there wants to play a man. That's the way they want to play. But when you go up against an air raid, the tried and true way to do it is try to slow it down with, you know, a zone rush three, drop eight. And last year, like, one of the reasons State had success against Georgia last year is because Georgia really didn't want to break away from that. They eventually kind of had to keep from losing that game. We kind of saw the same thing against Missouri, against Ole Miss, and Ole Miss just has a bad defense to begin with. But every team that just doesn't want to get away from that man mentality, that's when State does tend to have their success. So I'll be interested to see if like you said, he doesn't like to get it. He likes to be aggressive. He likes to keep that man to man. That's a recipe where Mississippi State could thrive.
Yeah, that's interesting. I'm really curious about this matchup. I think Tony Gibson, he probably has experience playing air raid teams from his time at West Virginia and from his time playing in the Big 12 and that similar style. It's just not something that us NC State fans are used to. We just don't see it that often. So I'm really curious how they scheme for it. And I'm not sure. I'm really not sure at what, if he's going to stay aggressive or if he's going to, you know, do what you're supposed to do and play a little bit more control. This is a very side tangent. Did you watch the UGA Clemson game last night?
I watched some. I didn't watch the whole thing. It was a defensive slugfest. Let's just say that.
It was.
I don't know how much that is the defense or how much that is just both offenses.
I couldn't tell. I feel like both teams won on the lines on their respective sides, and the offenses couldn't do anything. But yeah, we both play those teams, so I'm curious how that's gonna, just how that translates. But that was a weird looking game. Anyway, yeah.
Yeah, it was.
Getting to less so of the actual teams, what is the game day experience? So I'm coming to this game. I got a few people going with me.
Right.
I know there's some other State fans going. What is the experience in, like, a game day experience like in Starkville?
It depends on what you're planning on doing. Like, if you're planning on, like, trying to, like, do any tailgating or anything like that, State has done a much – they really kind of committed to improving their tailgate situation a few years ago. There was a intersection in front of the stadium that was called Malfunction Junction that was just an absolute mess when I was actually at school there. They streamlined it a lot. It's nowhere near as bad as it was. But what they did is they closed off a lot of those roads and just put in just a bunch of grass areas so that there could be a real true place for people to tailgate. It's a nice place for people. It's a good way to really experience actual, you know, SEC tailgating. It's on par with just about everybody else. You got the tents up. There's all sorts of people there. You got everybody doing, you know, you got people who make a trip down to the junction who don't have tickets, but they want to be at the stadium. They want to see the experience, and so they put, you know, they bring their big screen TVs with their DirecTV remote hookups, and then that's kind of how they handle it. But on the actual, if you're not doing the tailgating, there's a place in Starkville or an area in Starkville called the Cotton District. That's where a lot of the, like, local restaurants are. Starkville gets crapped on a lot because of it's a lot of people are kind of get lazy with their takes on Starkville, because basically if you fly, most of the media flies into the Golden Triangle airport because they have smaller private planes, all that type of stuff. But they fly into there and they go straight to the stadium, and you don't have to actually go into Starkville anymore to actually get the stadium. You got to go past the stadium to actually get into Starkville. So a lot of people don't actually realize how much the area has changed. It's a much, it's a, I mean, it was pretty, I mean, I enjoyed myself when I was there. back in from 99 to 02. But it's much better now. There's a lot of places to eat. It's like I tell anybody, if you can't have fun in a college town, that's probably on you. It's probably right. Not on the town.
Yeah, we're staying just north of town. We're flying into Jackson. We're staying north side of Starkville. So I think we have to go right through it. And then if I'm not mistaken, the stadium's on the east side. So we should get the full exposure. Mm-hmm. What we've been debating this, like, should we try to tailgate? Should we just, you know, grab some beer and walk around and meet Bulldog fans? Like,
I would probably do that. With you flying in, that would probably be a difficult task to pull off, actually pulling off a tailgate. If you walk around, the people in Starkville are friendly. They'll greet you. They'll give you whatever they've got. I don't think you'd have any issues with that. I could be wrong, but I don't think you would. I think probably just, you know, grab you some beers and you should be good.
Where can I get a cowbell? Like, if I wanted my own cowbell, like, aren't they?
You can get them at a couple places. There's a place called, there's Campus Bookmark, which is on the east side of campus. They sell them. There is Maroon Company in like downtown Starkville. Across the street from Maroon Company what is the name of that store? I can't remember the name of that store off the top of my head now. They've got, oh, it's the Lodge. The Lodge has a ton of cowbells where you can buy. Those are probably the three places I would start. I know they probably have some at the game. But yeah, those are the places I would say. There's this tradition at State, but you're not a Mississippi State fan, so I wouldn't expect you to hold to this. But like, a State fan can't buy their own first cowbell. That has to actually be given to them. But like I said, you're not a Mississippi State fan. It'd be more of a, you know, sure, a game day experience. So I think they let that go for you.
That's awesome. But I mean, I always said, and I said this for NC State, and that kind of, I'm on my island here, is that we're very much a cow college. I don't know why we didn't embrace that and run with cowbells. I mean, I love it. I think it's, I mean, it's obnoxious, but.
Well, the reason the State did it, do you know the story behind that? I don't remember. I think it was 1927, I think. State was playing Ole Miss in the Egg Bowl, and they were losing, and all of a sudden a cow from one of the local pastures got free and ran onto the field. And after they got the cow off the field, State mounted a furious comeback, ends up winning the game. And ever since then, that's where State has run cowbells ever since.
Huh. I had no idea. That's mm-hmm. That's pretty cool. Where do we need to go eat in Starkville?
Places to eat. My personal favorite is Obie's. It's a sandwich place, but that's just more probably nostalgia. It's probably not the best place to eat. It's just, it was like 5 minutes away from where I lived when I was in Starkville. And me and my friends, we'd go there like 3 or 4 times a week. But probably the actual best food is probably called Two Brothers Smoked Meats. It's really, really good. You'll find them in the Cotton District. There's the Camp House is a good place to eat as well. They've like got special, they do other things as well, but like kind of what they're known for is their specialty mm-hmm. mac and cheeses. Like they've got like smoked brisket. I think smoked brisket mac and cheese, I think, is like one of them. So that's kind of like their specialty. They have other things. But I'm kind of, that'd be a good place to start. There's a new restaurant I have not had a chance to go to. It's a Mexican place, but they like do like Mississippi dishes and like Mexican, I don't know. It's weird, but I've heard it's really good. Now I can't think of the name of it. I was trying to think of how to describe it. Look, Red. What is the name of that place? It has something to do with tacos, but I can't remember exactly what. But I've heard it's really, really good. Like I said, I'm wanting to try it next time I make it down there. But those are probably the best places to start. Nice.
Yeah, I've heard about Two Brothers, and that was one of the ones on our list. But we're going in blind, so we don't know what the. Just figure it out as we go. But I mean, yeah, like you said, if you can't have fun in a college town, you're doing something wrong. I'm curious, what was your take on the baseball situation that went down in Omaha?
You know, it was I really felt bad for NC State. I really wanted to see how they would do against Vanderbilt, because Vanderbilt was going to throw Kumar Rocker in that first game against them, and if they won, which they did, but you know, I don't know how much to take away from it, because they would have gone through Kumar Rocker and they would have gone through Jack Leiter again, and that's a difficult task right. for anybody. I mean, they beat Leiter earlier in the week, but it was a 1-0 game. So, like I said, I really wanted to see how that was going to play out, and I can't, it was just a really bad situation for NC State. I felt awful for them, and it gave Vanderbilt an advantage in the World Series. They didn't take advantage of it, thankfully, but they had an advantage yeah. they didn't earn. They already lost. They should have had to have beaten NC State twice to get to the final, and they didn't have to do that because of the whole COVID quarantine situation.
I would have loved to have seen the Mississippi State NC State matchup in that game. I feel like that would have been a much better series.
Yeah, I kind of think that's what was going to play out, because I just don't know that Vanderbilt had the yeah. bats at that point. I mean, they fizzled. I mean, if it hadn't been for the first inning of the championship series in that first game, Vanderbilt did nothing. I mean, Christian McLeod, who State started in that game, he had just lost it. He just his last three starts, he just couldn't find what made him effective in the first part of the season, and they just lit up him. But once they took him out of the game, right. they couldn't do anything. So, like I said, I think Vanderbilt's offensive gas had kind of run out. I don't think they could have beaten NC State twice. Maybe could have beaten them once. I don't think they could have beaten them twice.
Yeah, that's my general concern. I just wanted to really rile up our fans. I have to hear that again. We're still salty about it. I think one of the most well-received images that came out of it was a Mississippi State guy, and I forgot his name at the moment, who hit the home run, turning around, holding up the wolf sign. Yeah. And we're like, yes, that's my guy.
Right.
Like, that's the guy. I like that guy. All right, back to the game real quick before I let you go. How does the fan base feel about this upcoming matchup? Do they like their chances? I think the Vegas line opened as a pick 'em, so I don't think anybody knows.
Yeah. Yeah, that was interesting to me when I saw that. I honestly thought NC State, based off of Mississippi State's performance on Saturday, I thought they were going to be like a 5 or 6 point favorite. That's kind of where I was thinking the line was going to open. Then I saw that pick 'em that just kind of really threw me for a loop. You know, this kind of goes into what I was talking about at the beginning of the show. I don't know. I still don't know what this team is under Mike Leach. Was the performance that we saw from Mississippi State yesterday, was that a true indication of what this team is? Or was it an indication of what Mike Leach teams have been in the past? I mean, Mike Leach has a history of not playing, his team's not playing well against bad teams. He lost Brett Hudson, who now covers Alabama. He used to be a State beat writer, and he got real kind of attached to State and the State fan base, so he still tweets about him quite a bit. He tweeted out during the game that Mike Leach has lost to, while he was at Washington State, years that he had good years, he lost to, I think it was Eastern Washington, Portland State, Nevada, and Rutgers on four different occasions. And there were other times that he almost lost games to really bad teams. So, I don't know if what we saw yesterday was just that kind of a Mike Leach performance against a bad team, or is it a real indication of what this team actually is. I tend to just because I don't have enough evidence since I'm given evidence that, you know, if this were like the fifth game of the year and State was kind of doing what I thought that they should be doing, and then they just had this one really bad performance, I could probably write it off, but I can't write it off at this point. So it makes me and a lot of Mississippi State fans start to wonder if they're going to be able to win this game on Saturday. I just don't know.
I don't think anybody knows. I know we were watching that game closely because we played both Louisiana Tech and Mississippi State. So, it's
right.
It's an interesting for us. But I try not to read too much in those first games. I don't think that was the real Mississippi State team. And so I think this is going to be a very competitive game. I don't know who's going to win. I feel like we probably have more experience and maybe a little bit more depth, but that doesn't mean anything when it's a road night game in, you know, Starkville. I think right. That's the thing that always gets stated is like the moment. Can the moment be? Is the moment going to be bigger than you are? That's what I keep telling like our fans. How do we handle that? Right. I think if we handle that well, it's going to be really competitive. But I can also see us going in there and having a game where we're not used to. You know, we're in all the 60,000 folks ringing cowbells at us, and you know, bad things happen. But I don't know. It's the pick'em line. It's probably spot on. I don't know which way people are right. going to lean, or you know, whatever.
I think it's going to probably move towards NC State just based off of Mississippi State's performance yesterday. I think it'll probably move in that direction. I think probably it'll be like a point and a half or 2 points by the time the week's over. If I had to guess, but I could be wrong.
I'm curious what's the crowd going to be like? Being a night game there should be.
It should be good. Bad. I mean, it's a 6 o'clock game. So it's going to be, I think it'll be a much more lively crowd than it was probably against Louisiana Tech. Plus you got a better opponent. It'll also probably be a nervous crowd. If NC State comes out and gets off to a hot start, that crowd will deflate quickly because they're going to be nervous after what they saw the previous week. So like I said, if NC State can get off to a good start against the Bulldogs, you could see the crowd get taken out of it real quick. But you know, I don't know if what we saw. I mean, they may be willing to stick around. They may not be as scared just because they saw the comeback on Saturday. I mean, that was the largest comeback in Mississippi State history on Saturday. They've never come back more than 14 points down. So, I mean, that's why everybody was writing that game off, because we had literally never seen that before.
Huh. Well, I'm excited for this. I'm excited for this trip. It was really – I told you when we were going back and forth that it's one of the hardest trips I had to plan, like trying to figure out how to get there and just all that stuff. man, it was wild. But I'm excited for it. I think it's going to be a good time. I think the game's going to be good.
It should be.
I'm looking forward to hanging out with Mississippi State fans and just, you know, experiencing that side, you know. Well, Justin, I appreciate your time and your insight into Mississippi State again. Hopefully it's not 6 years before we do it again. But tell our folks where they can find you. Where's the best places?
They can follow me on Twitter. It's just my name, Justin M. Strawn, Strawn. They can find me there. I do have a Facebook page for my podcast, Starkville State of Mind. I mentioned this to you before we started recording. I'm hoping that I'll have an announcement about my podcast because it might be on the move, but no, that's not finalized yet. But if that does, it will all be on my page and stuff.
Awesome. Random question. Back in 2015, one of the things that stood out to me, you guys were doing radio too, right? Weren't you getting your podcast on the radio at some point, public radio?
Yeah, it was it was called the Bully Bark Line. And basically, I got a better offer to go to what at the time was V-Sporto Network for Bulldog Sports Radio. And that's why I ended up switching from the radio to the podcast, because I just, even though that was on the radio, that podcasting network, Bulldog Sports Radio, I mean, they were pulling in, you know, a lot of listeners. So it was really much more beneficial for me to switch over to them, even though it was just a podcast and not a radio station. So, but yeah, it was when I was first started doing this, it was a terrestrial radio.
Oh man, show. I remember when you told us that, Dustin, we hung up and then, my partner at the time, Dustin, we were like, we need to do that. We need to get on the radio. Like, that's awesome. I was so jealous of that. But here we are still podcasting 6 years, 200 episodes later.
Hey, man, let me tell you, I don't really listen to the radio that much. I mean, I have podcasts going all the time. It's not, if it's, you know, I listen to a couple of state podcasts, but I listen to movie podcasts all the time. Yeah, I don't listen to radio anymore. I mean, it's not as prevalent as
it used to be. You can find a topic in a podcast about anything, and I think that's the best part about it. And you can deal with people who know what they're talking about, as opposed to generic. You know, in our area, sports radio is terrible. So, yeah, that gives us motivation to keep podcasting. But all right, Justin, well, I appreciate your time. I'm really looking forward to this game. Are you going?
No, unfortunately, we're not going. We got restrictions, all type of stuff. I mean, I'm a teacher by day, and they're trying to really discourage us from traveling just because if one of us gets sick, then it makes we're having a hard time finding subs, and so they're not telling us that we can't travel and stuff like that, but they're really discouraging it. So just because it's tough right now.
Yeah, that's all right. One more question, Elad. What's the mask situation there? I know for us, we started. They recommended it for like inside spaces when we went to the game, stuff like that. Like, what's the situation there?
It's the same thing. They're recommending it inside. I don't remember them saying it's required in indoor spaces, but there's really not any indoor spaces at State Stadium. I doubt you'll find too many places where they're actually wearing a mask. You'll find some people, obviously, but it's going to be in the minority.
All right, Justin. Well, for real, that was the last question. Again, I appreciate having you on. Appreciate your time and, you know, dealing with our flexibility here for us. I kept pushing you back, but.
That's great. That's a problem.
Good luck this weekend. And if there's anything we can do to help you out with your podcast and your show and come forward, let me know. Gladly put your message out, tweet it out, all that stuff. As always, appreciate it, man. All right.
No problem, man. Take it easy. Bye.